And I'm not talking to you this morning just from the standpoint of what I've done or haven't done or my successes or failures. I'm talking to you, first of all, from God's Word. You know, God's Word tells us, especially Moses, as he's talking to those Israelites in that last sermon or two, he tells them that what you're doing is for your good, not just eternal good. It's for your good here. And there are many things like that in this world. The Lord's teaching on marriage. You know, we can try everything in the world to make ourselves happy, but until we use His recipe, we're not going to be happy in marriage. That's just the bottom line to it. And the same goes for parenting and child raising and child rearing, whatever you want to call it. But I want to talk to you about that this morning as we talk about raising godly children. The passage here, and I don't want to turn to it right now, I'm going to make a reference to it. It's a wonderful passage, and you would do well to read it. It is in Jeremiah, of course, chapter 35. And the Lord told Jeremiah to invite these people, these descendants of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, into a room that adjoins the temple and serve them bowls of wine and cups of wine. And when he tried to do that, they said, "We will not do it. We cannot do it. We have been charged by our ancestors, by Jonadab, not to drink wine, not to build vineyards, not to do anything like that. And we have done that all of our lives." Oh boy, those are some parents there, aren't they? And those are some children. I want to talk to you about that. I want to do it in kind of a different way, and I do this from time to time. I want to talk to you about some qualities that you can't really have and be good parents. And you'll see that what it does is actually makes you think, I hope, more about what you must have to be good parents. To begin with, you can't be a cowardly person and be a good parent. You just can't do it. We are to be fashioning our children. Psalm 127 talks about that. Fashioning them, molding them, training them. Abraham shows this best of all, at least one of the best examples in the Bible. The Lord concurs with that statement because He said in chapter 18, verse 19, "I know Him. I know that He's going to teach His children and train them and help them to be the type of people that I may bless them and give them all the things I promised to give him, Abraham." Just two examples I want to look at with you. Do you recall that his son Isaac had grown up to be a young man? His mother had died. He was very down, sad, of course. And his daddy wanted to get a wife for him. But he called one of his older servants in and he said, "I don't want my son to have a wife from the people of the land that we live in. They're pagans. They don't know God. I don't want him to start out that way. Go back to where our family is, up in Aram, and go up there and find a woman for my son of our people." "Well, sir, what if she doesn't come back with me?" "Then you're released from your vow. But I want you to do that." And of course, he was a great servant. When you read this, you'll see how loyal he was to the Lord and to his master Abraham. Probably the best example of this, and you know it, would be when Abraham was told to take the 15 or so year old boy Isaac, the son of promise, the son of whom the great nation would come, and then the seed that would bless all nations. And the Lord said, "Take him out and sacrifice him." You read this passage here, it's interesting. He didn't debate with the Lord. It says he arose early in the morning and took the child out. I tell you, one of the most poignant moments in that story is when they're going up the mountain and the little boy says to his daddy, or the young man, "Daddy, here's the fire and here are the implements, but where the sacrifice?" And Abraham said, "The Lord will provide a sacrifice for Himself, my son." Can you imagine? Taking him up there and binding him and putting him on that altar and raising that knife, and at the last minute the angel stops him. "Now I know that you fear God with all that's in you." Have you ever thought about it? I know many of you have. But how Isaac must have gone through all of that as a child? Lying on that altar and looking up at the knife being raised by his daddy? And we read about this in Hebrews. Would you turn to this with me? It's that chapter of the faithful. Hebrews chapter 11. I love this. How can you go wrong with Hebrews 11? But it talks about this situation. Let's begin in verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promise offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Yes, Abraham showed great faith. But am I off the beam here when I say that Isaac showed great faith? He certainly saw great faith. And all the way through his life, Isaac showed much of what Abraham showed. Faith in God. Absolute faith in God. Some children see their parents kind of wavering. And there have been times when my children have seen me do that, and I'm not proud of that. We were talking about that man who was born blind in John 9. We've made references recently to that. And Jesus, just passing by, what did he do? He made him well, completely well. Notice that. Jesus doesn't make anybody halfway well. And the enemies of Jesus went all over the place trying to find something that they could accuse Jesus of. And they went to the man who had been blind, his parents, and they said, "Is this your son? Was he blind? And he sees? How was he made to see?" They said, "We know that's our son. And he was blind and he sees. But as far as how he does that, you go and ask him. He's an adult." And it goes on to tell us why they said that, why they did that. They were afraid. They were afraid lest the Pharisees would put them out of the synagogue. They were Jews and they wouldn't be able to worship. They did not stand. Do children see you honoring God more than you? I'm talking to the young men and women here, and many who have grown up into people who are responsible. What do you recall about your parents? We've talked about this a lot. Sometimes in religious groups all across this country, they honor Jesus and they praise Him. But many times they don't use this passage and passages like it. Jesus said this, "He who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son and daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Isn't that what He was asking Abraham? "Abraham, I know you love me. And I know you love your son Isaac. Oh, Abraham, I know. But who do you love the most?" And I don't want you to sing songs, and I don't want you to say, "Who do you love the most?" Interesting question, isn't it? How do you react when there's a conflict between the life and schedule of your children and that of the Lord? What do you do? When you think about all of that, how do you handle that? I was watching a play one time, a congregation I worked at years ago, not here. But I was visiting a play, and it had a couple of our members in it. And as it went through, one or more used some very bad words. If you tried to talk to them about that, they'd go, "Oh, it's just a script. It's just what we have memorized. I mean, that's not coming from our heart." How do you feel about that? And I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it again. I actually heard, and this was not here, but it was at another, I've been at two other university towns. There were some Christians, not many, but were doing cheers at the game in which there were some ugly sentiments that were presented. But if you talk to him about it, "Oh, he didn't mean that. That was just a part of the whole scene." Parents, how do you deal with that? What do you say about that? Do you stand against that? Oh, I sure hope you do. You can't be a coward and be a good parent. Aren't controlled by fear. You know, there's a couple of types of fear that we need to be careful about. Fear of your children. Believe me, there are parents that are afraid of their children. They really are. I wonder almost if a part of this wasn't Eli's problem. You know, Eli had two positions that he held. He was the high priest and he was the judge. God was with him. He had authority and he was to exercise that authority to keep the land pure. His own sons were vile and they were priests. And in this particular passage, you see him trying to reprimand his sons. Have you ever seen a picture of that where, well, now, you shouldn't do that. That's not good. And I can almost imagine Hophni and Phinehas going, oh, brother, there's the old man again going off on us. Isn't he crazy? Isn't he foolish? And no chastening seems to be joyful for the present. And it doesn't, brethren. You who have children and even those that are growing up, it's painful. It's much easier just to kind of let them go. Well, they'll be all right. No. We were given the responsibility, if we bring children into this world, I know one day they'll stand for themselves and make their own decisions, but we will have to stand for what we did or didn't do. It's painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. You know, a lot of times we try to tell ourselves, well, I'm going to make them angry. I'm going to cause them to grow up to be a very intense and angry and hateful person. No, what you're going to do is cause them to grow up to be somebody who respects authority. That's the truth. If you just let it go and you're just going to... And refusing to discipline shows that you hate them. Oh, David, you shouldn't say things like... I didn't say that. The wise man said that. If you will not discipline your son, your children, you hate them. Those who really love your children disciplines them promptly. Now, some of you aren't parents yet. You need to listen to this. You'll be ahead of the game if you hear what the Lord teaches us about this. You can be afraid of your spouse. That's sad to me. I almost believe that Ahab was afraid of Jezebel. You know, the Bible says she stirred him up. She did. She caused him to be just as wicked. He was a bad man, but she stirred him up. But do you realize that you can err the other way? Let's say that one of you in the marriage, you have a child, and one of you is trying to correct a little child. Now, you stop that. Don't you do that. And here comes the other spouse up to you. Now, you let him alone. It's not his fault. He's sick and tired and hungry and sleepy and... Let me tell you this. You need to sit down and talk with your spouse. Because when that child sees you fighting and fussing over him and divided, you know when they get older what they're going to try to do. Now, I'm just telling you. They're going to try to divide you. I had a man tell me one time, he said, we had a rule with our children. If one of us told you no, and you go to the other one to try to get yes... you're in big trouble. Because we're together on this. God puts cowardly. You know, in Revelation 21:8, it gives a list of sins of those who will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. In fact, those that are going to be lost forever. You know what number one on the list is? Yeah. Cowardly. You better believe it. It will interrupt our service to God in many areas, and especially in being good parents. Laziness. Now, stay with me a minute. I know people can work real, real hard. In fact, very, very busy people are sometimes not good parents. We should know the stages of a child's development. Now listen, I'm not saying you have to go get a degree in child development or a master's. You don't have to do all of that. But you do need to understand the various stages that every human being passes through. Because you need to know what to expect of them and what not to expect of them. And to deal with them appropriately. Good parents are well informed about infancy. Well, you know, we talk about children should submit to parents. I'm going to tell you this. I've had three of them. You will submit to your children. In the middle of the night, early in the morning, late at night, change diapers, change clothes, give them baths, feed them, put them to sleep, get up to take care of them. It's not easy. And we've talked about this before, where mothers that are just worn out are wondering, oh, what's wrong with me? I'm dead. My child's killing me. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just being a good parent. You're being a persistent, a good parent. And then there's toddlers. I don't know how that happens. First steps, first words. It's wonderful. And then preschool. That's when they begin to walk and talk. Listen. And that's when they begin to hear. And they begin to think from the very beginning. And you may think, well, no, you know, wait until they get on up to 8, 10, you know, then you can begin to. I know I've told this to several of you privately, Belinda and I have. She does not want me to use her in any illustrations. But she's not here, is she? You all don't tell her. She was riding along one time and little Cole was sitting by her about 6 months ago, I think. He'd been 3 and a half. And she said, Cole, don't do that. He said, well, I'm mad. She said, well, that's okay. You're not going to do that. He sat there for a while, didn't say anything. And then after a while, he looked up at her and says, well, I'm not going to serve the Lord. Children know what's important to us. Children know what we stress. Children know. Do you not know? Pre-adolescent, that's when you begin mentally and physically to learn how to do things. And then adolescent. Young adults. And those raging hormones. And how difficult is that? And you know, you read things now and they're saying 18, maybe very early 20s. Maybe you can't reason and see quite like we used to think you could. And you need to listen to your parents. If they're good parents, I mean. You need to listen to good men and women that have gone that path before you. And parents, don't let other people influence your children. You be first and foremost. Isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting how people can be so busy helping everybody under the sun and their own children go by the wayside? I think about Samuel. And years ago when I first read this, I could not understand it. The Bible tells us in these five verses that his sons, he put them in areas to be judges, but they were not like him. They didn't follow his devotion to the Lord. In fact, the city came out, the various Israelites came out and said, you're old and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now give us a king. How is it possible that they didn't follow him? You may be a very, very good person, but a lousy parent. Parents must teach their children. I'll say it again. Well, David, what a silly thing to put up there. Everybody knows that. Really? Do you know that you are to be the number one person to make sure your children know God through His Word? Do you know that? Moses stressed to parents the teaching of your children. We look at Deuteronomy 6:6-9 a lot, but I'm going to back up a couple of chapters. Only take heed to yourself. And diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. And teach them to your children and your grandchildren. You do it. It's okay to have friends and grandparents and send them to religious schools as long as they're not going to be indoctrinated wrongly. Oh, that's fine. But I'm going to stand for it. Israel failed to do what God told them to do. When Joshua and the elders that served with him died, it didn't take them long. It didn't take them long for the next generation and the next generation to fall away and start worshiping other gods. And in this passage, the Lord just came to him and said, that's it. I'm not driving out any more of these people from you. I'm going to see who you really are. And we're going to just find out. And sadly, he found out. Bible classes and preaching help children, but parents are to teach. Fathers, train them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. teach them. Mothers, young widows, marry, bear children, guide the home. You have no occasions for the adversary to speak reproachfully. Who is the Lord telling to teach and to preach and to help them the most? Well, my children are here every time the doors are open. I had a woman tell me that one time. She had a couple of sons, and neither one of them saw the church house after they left their home. She said, I can't understand that. I had them here every time, attending services and Bible. We were here every time. I didn't say it many years ago. But what needed to be said, how much time did you spend with them in teaching them and instilling faith in them? What did you do? It's good to have them here. I'm not saying that. But a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. When parents leave a vacuum in children's lives, understand this. When parents leave a vacuum, somebody's going to fill it. Now, that's just the way it is. Somebody's going to fill it. I heard a story once, of young man, he's a Christian, and he was in a car, Halloween night, and they were egging. They were egging other members of a high school. And this is a little town. Now, you can believe this or not believe it, but everybody knew each other. And the police had told them, said, now, you can egg your friend. We catch you one time egging somebody that's not. You're going to get in trouble. We're going to tell your parents. Well, they went in to, you might say, reload. They went into a store to buy more eggs. So they got several cartons, you know, and they kind of had six meals, like a B-52 of eggs. You know, this car, both the windows rolled down. And they came out and all got in the car. And some of the guys with coats, it was cold, started pulling out the cartons of eggs that they didn't pay for. I think about Proverbs 1, where they were saying wisdom is personified. And they were, come, let us have one purse. Let us be together. The Christian didn't know they were stealing that. But you know something? He was in the car with them. And you can see things like that. And young men and women need to understand not to be foolish. And parents, you don't need to be foolish in all of this. You know what we need to do sometime? We need to pick up our mirror, God's mirror, and we need to look into it. I know every one of you looks in, most of you look into the mirror in the morning before you come to church, before you go out on something, an important place you're going. And you look and you see what you need to do and to fix, and there's a smudge on your face. The Bible is our mirror. But James warns us not to look in it and then just go away. Forget what you've seen. How many of us have done that? How many of us do that? You cannot be lazy and you cannot be naive. Have you ever noticed that some people see their children as some of the few on earth that are just perfect? Oh, my little Johnny wouldn't do that. Johnny doesn't think that way. Johnny wouldn't act up like that. But they have laser views for everybody else. The Bible simply says foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and the rod of correction will basically correct that. Now, when you see a rod in this book of Proverbs, it's not talking about a big stick or just a rod that just beats people and almost kills them. It's talking about correction. It's talking about spanking. It's not talking about something that would abuse the child. It's talking about something that would save the child. And every one of our children is just the same at the beginning. Whether you want to believe that or not, it's true. We must understand that we cannot allow ourselves to see our children and just be so naive as to think, well, they would never do anything. Now, I'll tell you, Brother so-and-so's child over there, have you noticed how they act? And if you've seen it, I suspect she and be wise as serpents, harmless as doves. Be careful. And don't laugh at your children when they are acting wrong. I know that they're too young sometimes. I made that mistake with my first daughter. I thought I knew everything, and I knew very, very little. But I'm going to tell you, your children grow before you know it to know exactly what they're doing. I've actually seen children sticking their tongues out at their parents and slapping their parents. Now, and tell them, stop it! And their parents just laughing at them. Isn't that cute? Maybe when they're 2 or 3, it's cute. But when they're 13 and 14, it's not cute. I've seen parents grieve, because they didn't follow God's recipe. We must still help young adults to make right choices. I've heard people say, our son is 15, and we just decided that he's a grown man now, and we're just going to let him make his own decisions. What a ridiculous idea. 15, 16, 17, you need to help your children. Friend, I want to tell you this. There's going to come a time when they won't hear. Parents, don't be oblivious to what they are doing. I heard of a situation once where a parent was in the other room talking on the telephone, watching TV, and their adolescent child was in the room watching a computer. I don't know a lot about the video games. I know many of you do. Aren't some of them rated? Aren't some of them rated pretty bad? I heard this situation where this parent was in the other room, maybe parents, and their child was in the other room constructing a person from body parts. Can you imagine where that could go? They could be in another room watching anything they wanted. Something a woman told her children one time is, you need to understand, as long as you're in this house, I'm going to search your room whenever I want it. I'm going to open your mail whenever I want to. I want to know where you are. I want you to be in at this particular time. Well, that's not fair. Well, that's the way it is. If you don't want that, you go find you somewhere else to live. That sounds so cruel. Let me tell you what's cruel. It's to watch your children leave the Lord and to be lost. Can your adolescent child sin? Absolutely. Fashioning process must begin early if you want to make them faithful. God compares raising a child to an archer. I mentioned this earlier. 27:3-5. And we don't know a lot about that. But archers back then would make their arrows, or somebody would, and they would work a good while to make sure it was straight and true. Preparing the feathers just right. The point. So that when they... I love this image. When they aim them out into the world at the mark, and they release it, they're going in the direction they want them to go. There will come a time when they won't hear you. And especially if you haven't been a good parent. Look with me to this. It's just 3 verses. Judges chapter 14. You'll understand it when you get there. Verse 1. Of Judges 14. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now those aren't people of God. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me. Now look carefully, verse 3. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people, that you must go and get a wife from the circumcised Philistines? Now I want you to notice this last little bit. Here is, in just a short sentence, you can tell a lot about this. And Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. I've thought about that so many times. Can't you see this big old strong man? Well, get her for me. She pleases me well. What a dumb person. What a sad person. And the end of his life was extremely sad. Ignoring the Lord's principles often brings headaches in your life. And I don't have to say much more than what David went through when his son was trying to kill him. Finally, selfishness. Selfish people are self-centered people. You can't be a good parent that way. You can't do it. People might have many good qualities. You might be gregarious and outgoing and helpful and serving and a lousy parent. Now, Israel's mentioned here, but it's Jacob. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than his children because he was a son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. I wonder where he learned about showing favoritism. His daddy was Isaac and his mother was Rebekah, and they both doted on the twin boys, Jacob and Esau. Isaac loved Jacob. Rebekah loved Jacob. And they fought and clawed, and they learned it. And yet Joseph's brothers saw it too, didn't they? The brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers. They hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Parents, you need to tell your children about the devil's nature. That Jesus says he is a wolf in sheep's clothing. That Peter says that he is a roaring lion with one purpose and one purpose only. And that is to take you away from God and take you to eternal condemnation. Talk about the sensitive matters. You know, when a child is 3 to 5 or in there somewhere or even older and they want to talk about this and that, there are times that are appropriate just to say, hush. When they grow up into that adolescent, late pre-adolescent, adolescent, and they come to you, Daddy and Mama, we want to ask you, you provide time. Marriage is honorable and all, and the bed is undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Let's talk about this a little bit, son. Honey, shut the door. Let's talk together. Like I said earlier, if you don't talk to them, the television will, the movies will, the iPods will. You talk to them. Must protect children from themselves. It's important to do that. I will say this. We need to see like God sees more often. I'm satisfied that's true. Do you remember when Eli, we've talked about him, and he tried to, you might say, discipline his children. He was an utter failure. But as Samuel told him from the word of the Lord, your sons made themselves vile and you restrained them not. Here's what the Lord thinks about you. If you let your children pretty much do what they want to do. He sent a man of God to Eli. Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering, which I have commanded in my dwelling place? Look at this. Look. And honor your sons more than me. You not realize that we speak loudly with our actions. Or with our inactions. You cannot be a good parent and be selfish. We need to let our children know about unfaithfulness and how it will affect our relationship. I've actually heard young men and women who were struggling, deciding, where am I going to go? Am I going to go off into the world or am I going to serve the Lord? And they look at their parents and they know where their parents stand and they know their parents are far from being perfect, but they stand with the Lord. And they know that if I take this direction, I'm going to interrupt all of that relationship. You think I'm making this up? And that has served to keep people from going off. Don't ever think. Even when you're a grandparent, we don't want to meddle in other. But when it comes to saving souls, you talk to your children. And if you've been a good parent, and if you've had the good qualities, you'll be surprised at how they'll relate to you. They might agree. They may not agree with you about many things. There may be old fogey ideas that we hold. And they, oh, brother, my dad. I know that's true in my family. But I hope and I think my children respect my wife and I. You've got to be strong. You've got to be strong. And you know why this is so important? Really. You tell me why it's important. Why does Moses hammer that idea? Why, when you get to the New Testament, do you see so much that's said about it? Because if we do not teach our children, I mean to do it. Your children won't know who the Lord is. Their children won't know. And just like it always has been, if you don't know the Lord, you don't know what He wants. What will you do with this lesson? You know, it's always the goal. And I'm going to tell you this. The lesson may not be that great, but the idea is wonderful. And every minister that's worth his salt wants the lesson to sink deeply into good and honest hearts. What will you do with this? Begin a good, God-honoring tradition like the descendants of Jonadab? Or will you just refuse to take this issue seriously? Will you kind of act like maybe you're not where Hophni and Phinehas was? Maybe you're not there. But you know something? You're going to be with them. If what you're going to do all your life is just laugh at godly principles that are so important, so fundamental, and that God has given His Son so that we might be forgiven and that we might take this seriously and follow Him to the best of our ability. Please think about this. I will say this, and I've said it so many times. If you cannot serve the Lord, now, you may be a good person, and I've seen this a lot in my life, and this is not to hurt anybody. None of this is to hurt anybody. It's to help us. Because you know something? Anytime we want to, we can change. Well, I spent about 30 years. I don't care if you spent 50 years. You can decide you're going to do differently. I've seen so many examples in the Scriptures and several in my life. But if you're going to try to tell your children what to do and how to live morally and what this and that, what about you? How are you living? You need to first submit yourself to God. And you know something? Let them see it. Let them see it. Because you may be a parent and you may have to teach them and raise them, but I'll tell you this, every one of us is under God. And we'll answer to Him one day. Please take this seriously. Now, what you need to do, make it so easy for you. Just come down. I believe Jesus is the Son of God and be baptized into Him. Or make your life right. You know, I believe there are times when people are just kind of sitting and they're just thinking and there's just that right moment. I need to do better. I need to make my life right. Oh, I hope it's now. If it is, come right now while we stand and sing.